As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources. This is for you if you are ready to go all in. If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders.
Welcome to this episode. We have a great guest today, Don Connolly. You're going to love his style. He has been coaching advisors on communication skills, soft skills for a lot of years. He has a personal story of being in the industry and what it took for him to be successful. He challenged me. I took a lot of notes during this episode. Let's dive in with Don and lean in. Communication could be uncomfortable at times, but it should be a superpower for all of us as advisors. And this episode will help level you up. Don, thank you for being here, my friend.
Yeah, my pleasure, Stan. Thank you.
I love what you teach. I think I appreciate it more now in my career than I did at the beginning. I think early on as an advisor, I was like, how do I sell stuff? You know, I got to, you know, product knowledge, certifications, all these things that the industry kind of said is the most important thing. But you're a soft skills coach. I think the ability to connect with people, you know, convey confidence to them for them to take action, I realize is a superpower for an advisor. So if you could, for our audience, introduce kind of your background, your story, getting where you are, and then I want to get into like really practical steps.
Yeah, let me, if I may, just give you a bit of history. You know, until I was in production back in the 1960s, literally. By the way, I tell clients today, if you want to make a note of this, I say the first day in production, the Dow closed at 848. It's now 45,000. I've been worried every day since.
Nice.
But back in those days, Stan, 1974 was ERISA. Until ERISA came along, only 5 million people owned stock. So we were selling stock to rich people. I was at EF Hutton as young stockbrokers. And of course, the way you sell stock is with a story. And I think when Managed Money came out, Linsco and LPL and Sam, we began to lose the story. And I know what I know, which is storytelling. And I know people don't buy what they don't understand. So it's timeless. You know, people say, well, these ideas are so timeless. Even though technology goes like crazy, the way people make decisions hasn't changed in centuries. Is this good for me? Is it good for my family? Is it safe? Should I flee? Should I fight? And that decision-making process has evolved very slowly, and it's very attuned to storytelling. So that's sort of my, like, so I was an advisor for many, many years. I spent 20 years as the head of marketing, senior VP of marketing at Putnam, really as a corporate spokesman, speaking in events. And then I've been coaching advisors for the last 25 years.
Love it. I was probably 8 years into my career until I was forced to focus on communication as a skill set to grow my business, to get people's attention. How quickly in your career, and it sounds like storytelling from the start, or did somebody grab you, you know, on week one or two and was like, hey, you're not going to win unless you get really good at this skill? How did that come across? You
know, God bless E.F. Hutton. I was sent to New York for 6 months, Monday to Friday. In the mornings, we'd study for the test. In the afternoon, it was role playing. Nice. So the lamp was a microphone. It was a camera in the corner. The prospect was a veteran trainer. And we literally told stories for 6 months. And we had to make them shorter and shorter. You know, I had to write a value prop for 3 minutes, then 1 minute, then 10 seconds. Everything was short. You know, parables have lived for thousands of years in the Bible because there are immense amounts of wisdom in a few words. And I was subject to that training for six straight months every day. Then when I went back to my branch manager beat me over the head with the same story. You know, same discipline. So I've always told stories. And now I'm so far out, I'm back in. I am now retro. I'm officially retro. But, you know, clients, the basis of what I do is people looking for an advisor aren't looking for information, looking for someone they can trust. So if the advisor is going to get the account, three things have to happen. You know this better than anybody. People have to like you, trust you, and think you're smart. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, LOS 2 or LOS 20, or it doesn't matter. If I like you and trust you, we're good. Yep. So what I teach is likability, trustworthiness, communication skills, Because people, when you sit down, they're not going to listen until they know you're there for the right reasons, right? So they're focused on your authenticity. Yeah. And these young advisors today, Stan, are so, I call them overeducated, undertrained. All they know is product knowledge because there's so much to learn, and they tend to spew that out. And people aren't listening. They're sort of watching, can I trust this guy or this gal? Are they here to sell me something? Are they here to help me? So really, authenticity is forefront in the beginning completely.
I not do feel, yeah, and one of the firms I started with, it, there was training in this. There was like, hey, here's what our firm says we do. Here's our three pillars. You know, there's kind of this, here's this intro spiel to give to somebody to like establish how long our firm's been around. But it's almost so bad that I'm almost rather they didn't train it at all. Because you almost think you've been trained in communication when compared to what you're explaining, you know, that's the difference between, you know, playing baseball in your backyard versus being in the major leagues.
So we all draw from the same pool of resources. We all have the same information. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, we're all Italian restaurants selling the same food at the same price and the same menu. How do you stand out in that sea of sameness? And the answer is likability and trustworthiness. If you're likable, people will stand in line to open accounts with you.
Yeah.
If you're trustworthy, it's awesome.
What does that look like practically? I know for us, because this was a big challenge and helped me grow up my business, we're doing a live 2-day speaking event because I couldn't find one. You know, people always ask me, Stan, what's the speaking training you went to? And I was like, I don't even think the company still exists. It was in New Jersey somewhere like 10 years ago. Where does an advisor start? Because there is a lot of discomfort to be had when you step into this realm of what you like role playing. I think more people would spend most of their energy avoiding it as opposed to like trying it. What does it look like for you to start one, helping somebody recognize they aren't as good at this as maybe they think they are? And then how do you venture into this world of becoming much better at it?
Well, I could recommend books, certainly. So the idea is to literally learn the physical steps of building a story. And then get a low-risk partner, someone who's not going to mock you or give you a hard time, who's going to listen to you and help you critique your presentation.
Yeah.
I don't want to digress too far, but if I make one point, there were two guys in history named Flesch and Kincaid. Flesch made his bones in the 30s and 40s, making things easier to read. The New York Times is written at a 10th grade level. So that was his job. Florida was the first state to write car insurance at a 9th grade level. In the 1970s, Peter Kincaid was hired by the U.S. Navy to write manuals. How do you write a manual for someone, Stan, who went to Harvard and the guy next to him dropped out in the 5th grade, but they both have to read the same manual? How do you do that?
Wow.
They found out in their research, 80% of America can read it, at least at an 8th grade level. That's Harry Potter. So if you begin to get above Harry Potter, you start to lose 80% of your audience.
Mm.
The Gruffalo is 4th grade. That's Ernest Hemingway's genius. He wrote at the Gruffalo level, 4th grade level. Hmm. But I wanted, Flesch Kincaid have a website. It's called Flesch, F-L-E-S-C-A-I-D, Kincaid. And you can write down your presentation to you, any of your viewers. Go to Flesch Kincaid, copy and paste, and it'll tell you the readability of your presentation. And that's how, what's what you're saying. There's a bias called the curse of knowledge. When you know something so well, you can't imagine the person across from you doesn't. So you explain things in a way that makes sense to you, and they hear blah, blah, blah. And how do you overcome the curse of knowledge? How do you make, and I'm not talking dumb it down, Stan. I'm talking, you've got to make your speech so elegant that everyone understands every single word you're saying.
Yeah.
These people don't buy what they don't understand. Yeah. So
you may know who this quote's from. I need to research it again because I quote it. I would have written a shorter book, but I ran out of time.
Yeah. I didn't have time, or a shorter letter. I don't know. It's been around. It's some sort of an amorphous quote. Yeah, I didn't have time to write a long letter. So
simplicity is the gift. You know, it's like, it's hard. It's more challenging to take something complex and put it in a way. And I love the manual background to that. Like that there is a science behind communicating something in a way that people from different walks of life can understand it. So I'm going to do some more reading on that.
Dali said it took me 4 years to learn to paint like Raphael. Took me a lifetime to learn to paint like a child.
Wow.
So I think I tell the people I coach, if you can't explain what you do to a six-year-old,
yeah,
you've got it. You can't explain what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's got to be
When we get into the whiteboard training, because I think when I get somebody in a room, if I can interact with them and show visuals, I think that just brings energy, makes the experience more memorable. And I love when I do live events and I put an advisor on the board who's 10 years, 20 years, 30 years in the business, and they start illustrating, and their back is to the viewer for 30 minutes, you know, like they're writing everything out long form. And for the brave souls, I'm like, thank you for starting. But essentially, very quickly illustrates the point of like, wait, we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, Steve Jobs said, if you're going to use PowerPoint, you don't know your job. No good. PowerPoint. Keep it simple.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a brevity. I mean, it's all charismatic stuff. It's all elements of charisma, which I believe can be taught. But one of the characteristics of charisma is brevity. Brevity is very, and simplicity are very attractive. I have a friend, I keep quoting my buddy because he's so good. He's a world-class communicator. And he had a very wealthy doctor client who was going to retire, run his own account and play golf and get good at golf. And my buddy said to him, if you run your own account, you'll never get good at golf. He said, oh, you know, I never thought of that. Maybe you're right.
That's good.
It's that kind of versus the X's and O's. We're not in the business to talk about. We're not in the, our products are financial products. People want to pay their taxes and retire, educate their kids. That's our business. And they're going to go to the advisor that makes it easy to understand.
Yeah. So with the charisma piece, because that's something in my story, I don't know, it was a lack of confidence, you know, imposter syndrome when I was young. Part of my story coming up from, you know, nobody in my family had money, so who am I to tell people what to do? And I had to overcome that. There was something in me early on that was like, that's just not who I am. Like, I'm not the life of the party person. Until eventually over time, I realized like, no, if I care that much, like I want the person across me to feel my care. I can't hide it. And so now I feel like when I communicate and when I'm in meetings, I'm like, I love my job. Like so I feel it coming out of me now when it wasn't as natural before. How do you describe charisma and like, how do you teach it? Because I think a lot of people are going to say like, I either have it or I don't.
I describe it as a transference of enthusiasm. If I can make you as a prospect, as enthusiastic as I am about your chances to retire successfully, that's charismatic. All leaders have that. I learned there's a fellow named John Antonakis that I follow. When he was teaching at Harvard, he wrote a treatise, and it was I said, charisma is 12 learning characteristics. 9 are verbal. The others are facial expressions and body language. But Aristotle said 2,400 years ago, whoever masters the metaphor masters the world. We can learn metaphor, simile, analogy. This is all part of being charismatic. When the light goes on, the prospect or the client says, aha, Sten gets me. He understands. That's when you're going to get the account. Because when mom and dad leave your office after the first meeting, Sten, they're not talking about downside capture. Dad says to mom, what do you think? Do you like Sten? Do you trust him? And mom says, you know, I really like him and trust him. The account is yours.
Yeah.
If it's no, I'm not sure about him, it's like you're not going to get the account. So it's not how much. I'm smart. You're smart. We're all smart. We're all well-trained. We all know the same thing. Now it's the delivery. It's the connection. They deal business with whom they connect.
Yeah. Which in one part, I know when I was a young advisor, was frustrating because I'm like, I may not be the best speaker, but like I know more than the next guy. Like I believe that just the knowledge in and of itself should let me win the account because I've worked harder. I've studied more and maybe I'm just not the communicator. And I think over time I've come to terms with, I might be the smartest advisor out there with all the certifications, but if I can't communicate my value and connect, I'm going to be the smartest advisor with no clients.
Yeah, I was coaching a younger advisor, and he said to me, I had a couple in, I did a plan, it was perfect, it fit them perfectly, and they just wouldn't do it. And they left, and I can't figure it out. And without being pretentious, I said to him, you're selling a plan, they're buying a dream. It's two different things. One of the best advisors I know in this country, also one of the largest, not coincidentally, he has coined a phrase called personal financial vision. And he says to people who come in his office, what is your personal financial vision? What is it? What do you want to accomplish financially? Oh, we want a home in Ohio fully paid for and a condominium in Florida and our kids educated, a couple million dollars in the bank. He simply says, if I can make your vision come true, can we do business? What's the answer to that question?
He
doesn't talk about, you know, ETFs and SMAs and managed money and terrorism and interest rates. I can make your dreams come true. I do that. Are we good?
That's bold. Yeah. I think there's a lot of confidence.
It takes a lot of confidence. And I've been doing it for years. You've been doing it for quite a while. You've got a very, very confident guy. It's simple, but it's not easy. You have to practice. You know, we're actors, Sten. When we step on stage, we've got to know our lines. And I don't mean sound canned. I mean, we have to know what we're doing. And confidence to me is knowing you can do the job. Yeah. And the confident advisor is going to get the account all day long.
The time is here. Our Overcoming Resistance course is now live. I would give anything to go back in time and have this information earlier in my career. I would have wanted to reject average and recognize the most important decisions I should make as a business owner. Visit gobeelite.com to access the course now. I wish I would have had this sooner, and now I'm giving it to you.
Where do you see advisors stumble in the confidence side? I think for me, when I was a young advisor, I do believe if you're listening and you're in your 20s and there's any part of you that thinks I just can't be as successful as I want yet because I'm not old enough yet. I think I fought that because I was like, why is somebody that's in their 50s going to do business with me?
Yeah, of course.
Until there were some times where I sat with somebody that was, you know, financially, you know, better off than me, but I was so confident in my delivery that I think I took them off guard.
Oh, yeah.
Because they believed it. And they're like, oh. And for me, I think maybe it was out of desperation. I said, I just have to go for it because if I'm halfway, I lose an account. I'm not going to stay in the business long enough. What would you say to that?
Well, I think that first of all, the highest paid people in America are young. They're athletes. They're entertainers. They're Silicon Valley people, tech people. Mm-hmm. Talent is ageless. I was 21 years old. I would say to people, yeah, I'm young, but I'm working on getting older every day. But, you know, you don't represent, if you're an advisor and you represent, say you're with LPL or Cetera or Merrill Lynch, you can pick up the phone and call the best expert on municipal bonds in the world. It's not like you're out there on all by yourself making things up as you go. You're representing an enormous organization. So I would, you know, I'd say this is the team. This is the Merrill Lynch team. We're 20,000 strong or whatever. LPL, you know, bigger than Merrill.
So I think the idea of selling a process over a product. Because that I can get confident about much sooner. I have a system.
Your original question is, where do we start to lose the confidence? I would tell you, number one reason advisors fail, bar none, is they don't see enough people. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, I just talked to a major firm, one of the big four, and they told me their internal studies show that the average advisor in their firm spends 70% of his or her time preparing to talk to clients. 30% of the time talking to clients. What do you think the elite advisors do?
Flip it.
So we're all getting ready to get ready because we don't wait on the confidence to go out there and get a bloody nose. The second biggest reason advisors fail, they don't follow through properly.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you've gotten as far as you have in life at your age, you're a very organized guy. You're very good at following up. And if you follow up in this business, you're dead.
That's right.
Because this, you know, 5-star service, that's to hurt. You got to get off your butt. We're all selling service.
That's right.
It only separates you from the advisor next door is your service model. That's why I tell advisors, you know, don't ask people, what do you think? Ask them how it makes them feel. People don't buy based on what they think. They buy on how they feel.
Yeah.
That's your brand. When you look at a Mercedes-Benz, how do you feel? When people talk to Sten Morgan and he walks away, how do they feel? Mm. That's your brand. Your brand is obviously confidence. You look like you could do the job really well. And that's what people want to hear and feel.
That's right.
They don't want someone, you know, if you blow your knee out, what do you want to hear? I've done a million knees. I've done LeBron James's knees.
Right.
Well, I've never done this before. I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, you're my friend. I got to start
somewhere. So it's all confidence here. Knowing you can do the job. Study, work hard, practice, learn your lines, get out there. You know, one of the ironies in our business, and is the harder you work, the sooner you find out what doesn't work. You fail fast. That's a pretty good thing.
Yeah, we use a term.
You never know, right?
Yeah, Teddy Roosevelt's the Man in the Arena poem. That hit me between the eyes when I read it because I was like, I want to be the person that's in the arena. And I feel like there's a lot of people in our industry or advisors that are in the stands, you know, with opinions and judgments. And at some point, it's like, man, I want to be the one that's marred, you know, in blood and sweat. And part of that is.
Yeah, I'd rather be a meteor in dust. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that's where I see a lot of advisors not just stepping in to the stuff you're talking about, because it is uncomfortable. But I think
you've been around long enough now. There's never a minute you're not an advisor.
No.
When you're young, you're an advisor from 8 to 5 or whatever it is. But at your age and your experience, I'm sure if you go to a football game, sit next to somebody, you're still an advisor. You're never not an advisor because it's in your blood. Yeah. And that's where it has to get to be that I'm not, it's not my job. It's who I am. The most important story you'll ever tell is who I am. Who are you? Why are you here? How'd you get here across from me today? We don't do business with strangers.
Yeah.
So tell me a bit about yourself. But, you know, I always tell advisors, imagine you're at the Ritz-Carlton in Naples, Florida, at the pool, sitting in a Chase Lounge, and another couple sits down next to you. You're not going to give them a PowerPoint presentation, bullet points. You're going to start a conversation.
Yeah.
You're married, you're single, you're local, you're a native, you're a transplant. Where do you go to church? Do you have kids? Where do your kids go to school? So building a narrative. That's what prospects want to know on the first appointment. Hey, you married or single? You local or transplant? Where do you live? Where do you go to church? Do you like dogs? What do we tell them? Downside capture, asset allocation, safety, diversification. Clients don't want any of that. They want to educate their kids and retire. They're going to do it with a person that makes them feel good.
Yeah.
Very simple.
Where did your emotional intelligence come from? I think back to myself as a young advisor, where it was like, I just want people to think I have it all together. And so I had a solution to every problem. You know, I didn't really share much personal struggle or my story like you're talking about that made me relatable until life hit me and I went through some hard stuff. And eventually it's more of like a calm confidence came out of it, which people feel versus like a forced confidence. In your story, you obviously had early training. You were just thrown in the deep end, selling stocks, telling your story. How did your emotional intelligence shift over time?
I think a lot of it I was born with. I'm a pleaser.
Okay.
As a young kid, I was a reader. I was very curious. You know, one of the signs of intelligence is curiosity. And I was a very curious kid, and I'm a very sensitive kid. My father died when I was very young. I grew up with my mother, grew up with a woman in the house. I mean, you get sensitive to it. I'm very sensitive in that sense. So I think a part of IQ is just controlling my emotions, but controlling the emotions of others as well. And I think it's responsible for 95% of our success. Product knowledge, hard skills, maybe 5% of our success. We all can parse a sentence, Stan. We all can read a balance sheet. We all can write a plan. It's not where it's at. It's connection. So I don't know. I came, I guess I was born with it. I was lucky. God blessed me with it, I think, a lot of it. And the other was, I was taught early on, you got to tell the story. People buy for emotional reasons. They justify it with logic. But I don't care if it's a new car or a home. That's an emotional purchase. Yeah. I was taught, I remember my trainer beating me on the head. He one time, I was in Boston, and he gave me the Honolulu Yellow Pages so I could cold call at night. But he was just always, tell the story, make a connection. How did you make them feel? He said, if someone does something to count with you, make them feel good about that. Don't get mad and hang up the phone. And, you know, we had a guy in our firm who ran the back office. He used to make young kids on the sales desk. This is at a fund company I worked at. Put rocks in their shoes. So when they walked, they'd feel the pain older people might feel. So when you make a phone call or get on a phone call of an older client, know what they're going through. Wow. Don't get upset with them. Don't get short. Don't get angry. They'd make them walk around with rocks in their shoes to feel the discomfort that older people might feel naturally. Wow. Empathy, you know, one of the accelerators of trust. I won't do business unless I trust you.
Yep.
And one of the great accelerators of trust is empathy. The minute I understand you get me,
yep,
I'm going to do business with you. I want the advisor that makes the connection. But, aha, I get it.
Yep. What does that look like when you would be on a call? So I'm thinking of all the advisors listening, and they get somebody on the phone, or they bump out somebody into the, you know, at his kid's soccer game. Where does the story start? How would you start a conversation with somebody, you know, because you're going to lose them probably pretty quick if you don't.
It's funny you ask that, because I'm sure you do believe this. The biggest social skill fear in America is public speak. But the second biggest social fear is meeting strangers. Believe it. And as friendly as America is, people are afraid to meet strangers.
Yeah.
So I have to have a friend, Marvin Brown, who wrote a book on how to meet anybody, anytime, anywhere. And Marvin makes a couple of great points, one of which is people are voice activated. No one's going to walk up to you and start a conversation. You've got to start it with them. If you're afraid to meet strangers, you've got a problem as a young advisor, because you got to go, everyone you meet is a stranger. But I think part of it's finding, as Marvin would say, Stan, it's finding an environmental prop around you and using that prop to start a conversation. You could be at line at Starbucks and say, man, I love the smell of coffee. I can't wait to get my coffee in the morning. It's an environmental, you walk into somebody's office and there's a Penn State football helmet on the credenza. That's an environmental prop. Picture of a family. It shouldn't be awkward. It should be, wow, did you go to Penn State? Hey, I love coffee too. So I think the key is asking open-ended questions, not yes, no questions. If I say to you, how was your weekend? You're lousy. I go, oh, that's the end of that conversation. If I say to you, Stan, what'd you do this weekend? It's a whole different conversation. Now it's open-ended.
Yep.
What'd you do Friday night and Saturday? Now we're talking. So it's asking open-ended questions, being aware of the environment around you, being the one to initiate the conversation. Mm-hmm. I teach a whole course, believe it or not, on establishing rapport. 10 steps of establishing rapport. People don't know how to establish rapport. Stan, how do you turn a conversation from chit-chat to business? That's a whole art. Small That's talk right. leads to big talk. How do you make the segue? How do you do that? Great. How do you say goodbye? How do you get yourself out of a situation and say goodbye when you're talking to somebody? How do you do it gracefully? It's all stuff you and I might take for granted because maybe we were naturally born that way. Yeah. But you learn, you got street smarts, but younger people don't have the street smarts. I have two grandsons, both out of college, one's in law school, technically brilliant kids. They're social skills. They've never been taught social skills.
Wow.
They're not boors, they're not rude, but they're not socially adept either.
Got it.
And an older couple, when you sit down, want you to be socially adept. I'll be quiet, but lack of social skills is seen as a sign of incompetence.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Hesitating. Going, it's a sign of, not that it necessarily is, but, hey, this guy might not be as competent as I thought. Hmm. So you want to be graceful socially.
When you work with advisors, one thing we coach on is the different levels of resistance and areas of resistance that advisors face, and some overcome, some don't even know it's happening, and they're kind of losing that battle without even knowing it. And some recognize the resistance and run away. When it comes to communication, there's advisors on here that would want to argue with you. You know, they'd say, Don, it is about the AUM. It is about the insurance. What are you usually facing with advisors that are resistant to this approach?
Well, a lot of advisors don't know they need coaching. I'm not being arrogant.
Right, yeah.
But they don't. I don't know really. My wheelhouse. My wheelhouse is either younger advisors or advisors who have plateaued. Veterans say they plateaued at $3 million. Now they want to get to the next level, but they're kind of a little semi burned out. Or the big, big, big teams who want to learn to tell their story. So I don't argue. I just say I can't drag anybody uphill. Neither can you, or I don't want to certainly. So I say what I do is not for everybody. It's my personality. I'm a talker. I'm gregarious. I'm friendly. I'm social. It's the way I sell. It's the way I conduct my business.
Yeah.
Other people, you know, if I were dealing with Honeywell engineers, I might have a problem.
Yeah.
GE engineers, I might have a problem. Yeah. They want to go out 3 decimal points on fees. That's not me.
Yeah, exactly. So,
there's all kinds of different ways. But the best advisors I know, like you, one I can think of now, he has a $7 billion team. He was a disc jockey where he became a financial advisor.
Nice.
But disc jockeys have to be outgoing, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember one of the most successful nonprofits I ever met. The guy who founded it was a club promoter. There's something about him, you know, and it was just every nonprofit mattered. But like this guy told a story and got people's attention. And, you know, if at one point in your life you just had to get as many people off the street to come to your club instead of the other ones, like you become pretty convincing. And so for all the advisors listening, my hope is you're recognizing some resistance in yourself as you listen to Don, because I used to have that too around communication. I wanted to diminish the value of it. I wanted to say there was a way to do it without it. But I will tell you, I'm fully in the camp now that like it needs to be a superpower. Know your product, but I think that stuff's table stakes. You have access to experts behind the scenes. Like, communicate your value in a way where people feel it, and you'll 10x your business.
Yeah, you're right. It is table. Product is table stakes. You're absolutely right.
Gets
us in the game.
As we wrap up, what would be kind of some of your practical closing advice to everybody listening? Because I don't know how many people you're working with now, but I would say less than 5% of advisors are prioritizing and actively working on this skill set. What's kind of some practical advice we can give to everybody else?
Well, first of all, getting coaching and bettering yourself is not an expense. It's an investment. Invest in yourself. But the little witticisms, the bon mots I leave people with, I've learned over the years, number one and foremost, is nothing happens without an appointment. You can talk all you want, but you better get an appointment. The other thing I tell people, I've been doing this for 60 years almost. I've never met a successful pessimist, ever.
Wow.
Diana Schneider said, optimism is an intellectual choice. You obviously decided this morning, Stan, to be optimistic. I can tell you're an optimistic person. If you decide to be negative, you're not going to make it in our business.
Yeah.
People, we're selling dreams. We're helping people live their personal financial vision. You can't do it in a negative way. So nothing happens on an appointment. Choose to be optimistic. People to buy what they don't understand. People don't just decide to buy something, they decide who to buy it from. Yeah. So they're focusing on you. It's not you. It's not the product. It's you. it's cliche, but true. You were the product.
Yeah, I believe that. Where would everybody go to learn, get more of your content? I don't know how many people you're taking on coaching wise, but what would be the next step?
Well, I have two websites, donconnolly.com, of course, and then a learning center called Don Connolly 247. I'm also about to launch a column on Substack. So that'll be start up in the next week or so.
Perfect.
And it's going to be a missive at free message every week, 3 to 5 minute read every week, and then probably a $10 paywall. I'm creating a character called Gator. He's a terrific advisor. I'm in Florida. Gator's down here in one of the bayous. He has a lot of AUM, and he's just a good old boy. And I'm going to build a business novel chapter by chapter each week. Let the advisors build it with me. We'll build the story of Gator Markham.
Love it.
That's going to be on Substack. It's fun.
Good. All right. We'll link to that stuff. Don, I appreciate you, my friend. This was fun.
Stan, thank you for the opportunity.
We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.